I often visualize numbers and data that have people or lives behind them, ecosystems behind them. And I use organic shapes because it's my way to try to remind myself, first of all, and then hopefully the readers of the lives that are sometimes hidden behind those data and information.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Art Persist podcast, a series by Bostler Arts offering a glimpse into the life of artists and activists from all over the world, here to share their stories with you, the listener. My name's Georgia, and in this episode, we speak to Federica Fragapane. Federica is an independent information designer who specializes in creating projects and data visualizations as a freelancer. Many of her projects take an experimental approach, carefully selecting visual languages to encourage readers to engage with the narratives conveyed by the data. In 2023, three of her data visualizations were acquired by the Museum of Modern Art in New York, becoming part of its permanent collection. I've been wanting to speak to Federica for a long time because I'm deeply moved by her work, how she, in her own words, puts it, shows the human lives behind the data. And we see this across all of her work, whether it's using data visualization to show the number of deaths in Gaza, for example, or the number of people killed during the protests in Iran, or narratives about immigration, particularly in the European context. And that's what we really talk about in this episode. It's her ability to combine hard facts and data with creativity and empathy. I really enjoyed speaking to Federica, and I hope you enjoy listening. Well, Federica, thank you so much for coming on the Art Persist podcast. It means so much, and we're really big fans of your work. I remember seeing you talk at the, I guess it was the Migration Film Festival, and just being blown away by your work. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you. It's a real pleasure. I wanted to ask you, before we go into your life and your work, what if you could describe in your own words exactly what an information designer is?
The way in which I like to describe it is that I visually translate numbers and information into visual elements to tell stories and to help the comprehension of complex phenomena and data in general. So I translate data into visual representations to communicate, basically. This is my main goal.
Yes, absolutely. It's such interesting and very, I think, unique work. Can you tell us a little bit about your early life and how you got into information design?
Sure. So I studied communication design at Milan Polytechnic. I'm Italian, I live in Italy. And during my studies there, I have a master's degree in communication design, so I'm a designer. And during my master there, I attended this course, which is called Density Design, founded by Paolo Ciuccarelli, who basically is the professor who brought data visualization in Italy as a field studied at university. And I discovered that field there during my studies. And while attending this course, this is a course which is focused on information design and data visualization, I discovered how interested I was into this combination of graphics, visual elements, and contents and stories. And so after my studies at Politecnico, actually before my graduation, I started an internship at an information design agency because at that point I was interested into this field, Accurate. Which is based in New York and in Milan. I worked there in Milan for some years, and it was a great experience. And there, and it helped me even further understanding how interested I was into this combination of elements, also visual experimentation and information and contents. While I was working there, I also worked on my thesis. Then again, was an information design project. I worked on a visual analysis of organized crime in Northern Italy. Because it's a topic I'm very interested into, and I wanted to start using the competencies that I was learning to talk about complex issues. And organized crime in Northern Italy, it's a complex issues. And
yes,
it was even a controversy some years ago, the existence of organized crime in Northern Italy.
Yes.
And yeah, and then after some years at Accurate, and also after the publication of my thesis, which was well received also online, thanks to social media, I start receiving offers for freelancing projects. And then at that point, I decided that I was just curious to see. I mean, it's really rare to receive offers from a freshly graduated designer in Italy, in
Yes.
Trent, especially. And so at that point, I decided to start as a freelancer. And it was 2015. And so I've been
Okay.
freelancing since 2015 now.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And I've heard you say that the act of like visualizing data is similar to that of writing. I was wondering if you could expand a bit on that and how the two in your mind are similar.
So first of all, I really love reading and writing textual elements. So I love the act of reading and writing. And so I don't know if this is it's for this reason, but for me, designing data visualization is really an act similar to the writing one. For me, I'm writing with visual alphabets, with visual letters, often experimenting with visual letters and visual alphabets, because mainly I'm communicating. I'm communicating and telling stories through the translation, the visual translation on numbers. And it really helps me. For me, it's pretty natural to see my visual elements as an equivalent of an article sometimes, or depending on the complexity, as an equivalent of a long article or a tweet sometimes, or a short tweet. So for me, yes, I do pretty often these parallelism between my work and something written. And for me, the combination in general between my visual letters and then actual text, I really think that it's very important to combine my visual representations with clear and simple text and explanations, because my language is still relatively pretty new for the readers. And so it's really important for me to accompany them with text.
And it makes sense. I mean, I would love to know about the process in which you kind of start a project, because I was one of the works that you've done that I really loved was How Europeans Think and Feel About Immigration, where you have a website for it and you can click on each of the countries. I was looking particularly at the UK because I find it so interesting. And you kind of combine, as you said, simple text with graphics and visuals to understand exactly how different countries in Europe are thinking about immigration throughout the spikes. Can you tell us a little bit about, how you even begin to start thinking about making a work? And how you kind of transfer the data into something so beautiful and visual.
So thank you, first of all. So in general, something that it's very important for me, it's to constantly fill my mind and my eyes with inspiration. So and especially from works that are not related to data visualization. So art that I particularly love, the element of nature. I mean, it's a cliche, but I'm pretty inspired by organic elements of nature. And then it depends on the different projects, but the project that you mentioned, in the for the project that you mentioned, I worked a lot on the visual language, and I want to explain to you quickly. So Arts and Minds is the result of a collaboration with ODI, the think tank based in London. I've been collaborating with for some years now. It's a website that allows to explore data on perception about migration and also data about immigration flows in different European countries. And it's the result of our collaboration, because I co-designed it with Alex Piacentini, is an excellent designer and developer and a dear friend of mine, and with Marta Foresti, who now recently founded Lago, but at the time she was a director at ODI Europe. And at ODI team, at ODI, they had these reports. It's that they were doing for years, and in which they presented this data about perception of immigration in different countries. And they wanted to bring this information to life with a website, because we already collaborated together. And so we started to We had started to understand how their data could really be brought to life through data visualization and through also experimental shapes, less classical visual elements. And so it was very interesting working on the project because we started from considerations on the visual language that is often used to talk about migration. So migration is often described using metaphors such as the waves of migration, or using visually big arrows, also have a call negative feelings. We call the invasion, these invasion maps. And so we really started to think, okay, we want to talk about migration and also the perception of migration, but we would like to change, to challenge, and to change the visual metaphors used to talk about migration for this project. And so after some very interesting meetings and discussions, I proposed them to use the visual metaphor of the stratification of the mountains. So if you look at the website, you will see that there are different mountains, and each peak is showing data about immigration, but also departures, but also perception. And in this case, I really wanted to propose a visual metaphor that was completely different from the ones that are often used. Because, and the reason is that because the creation of the mountains is a natural process, natural and inevitable process that has always been part of our planet history. And immigration too, even if the cause of migrations, the recent cause, are not natural at all. And I'm thinking about climate change caused by humans or wars. But in general, the process of migration, if we look at the history of humanity, is something that has always been part of our history. And this is why I decided to use this, to propose to use this visual metaphor. And yes, so this talking about this project really allows me to talk about how the visual elements, the visual metaphors, the visual words I'm using to talk about some projects are really, really essential. And I think about them with deep care and yes.
Yeah, and it's so effective actually, because I think what I really love about your work is how you transfer kind of the hard data that we get all the time, the statistics, this amount of people are coming into the UK, for example, every year, or even, like I think recently they said that 30,000 people died in the Mediterranean last year, and how those that horrible feeling of, when people just become numbers. And I really feel like through your work, you kind of allow people to visualize what those numbers actually mean. I think, one of the works I really love of yours recently, or not, I think love is probably the wrong word, but that really had a powerful effect on me, is how you visualize the number of deaths in Gaza since October. And through a very simple kind of drawing of a leaf, I think, or a tree, with each of the petals on the leaves signifying one death. And it's so extremely powerful and upsetting. I was wondering if you could talk a bit about, the relationship between kind of data and empathy, and how you look to visualize that in a way through your work.
Yes, so thank you, first of all. And the project, this project you mentioned is part of I would say, a series of projects that I've started working on a couple of years ago. And those are projects without any commissions. And I just create them for social media. It's something that I didn't do years ago. I'm used to work with very rich and complex data. But some years ago, for other events, I started to using data visualization for social media to help shedding a light on the topic that I was interested into communicating. And so and in this case, the project that you mentioned is really connected to my frustration and also my lack of words in front of such events, I would say, the lack of words that I'm having at the moment right now. And so in this case, for instance, I designed for Gaza, I created this image that you were describing. So I drawn, yes, I don't know if it's a tree or kind of a leaf with 250 branches, one for each person was killed per day, because this kind of projects usually
Mm.
start from numbers that obsess me. So at the time, I was reading this report from Oxfam, and in the report it says that Israeli military was killing Palestinians at an average rate of 250 people a day. And at the point we were, the number of days were exceeding the 100 number of total days since October. It was more than 100 days since October 7th. And so this number, this daily rate was really obsessing me. And so this is why I started, I decided to visualize it and to represent it. And I hand drawn this leaf made of 250 branches. And then in the second slide of the post, you can see it replicated 100 times, because in order to give a representation of the total number of deaths at the time, and of course the number will never be accurate, but it's not what I am particularly interested when I work on this kind of projects. I'm more interested in, it's really a reflection of my lack of words to talk about these topics and also my lack of sleep. Many of the projects that I've been designed in this series, let's say, I usually create them because I cannot sleep at night, and
really,
it's my way to, I don't know, to try to communicate what I a part of what I think needs to be communicated when we talk about these issues. And the presence of organic elements for me, it's really important, because it's part of my practice. It's part of the way in which I visualize data and numbers that have people behind them. And it's something that I often do. I often visualize numbers and data that have people or lives behind them, ecosystems behind them. And I use organic shapes because it's my way to try to remind myself, first of all, and then hopefully the readers, of the lives that are sometimes hidden behind those data and information.
Yes, I completely feel that. And it is something about when you just see it and then see the size of it. And I think it's really powerful the way you did it on your Instagram with the first slide and then the second slide, just to kind of understand the scale. Because I think also at times like this, we're getting so much information. It's a very divisive time as well. Everything has kind of been thrown at us. So when you just are able to sit down and look at something clearly, it has a very powerful effect.
Hi, this is Hossam Fazula, co-founder of Bosla Arts. The Artists podcast is independently run by Bosla Arts, me and Georgia, which allows us to share these important conversations with artists and activists from all over the world. In order to keep having these conversations, we need your help. Join us on Patreon for as little as £3. And help us continue this vital work. More info in the episode description. Now back to the podcast.
I've heard you speak also about this kind of the idea of rationality in your work, and I was wondering whether that's related to how you see rationality impacting the way that you work, and also the kind of topics you decide to do when it's of your, you know, when you're working for yourself, basically.
There is a project that I'm very fond of, and when I talk about the coexistence of rationality and empathy. And the project, it's called The Stories Behind the Line. It's an old one. It's from 2016, actually. But it's still one of the projects I'm most fond of. And it allows me to talk about the concept of rationality and also communicating human data. So in this project, to describe it very quickly, it's the visual narrative of six asylum seekers' journeys to arrive to Italy, from their homeland to Italy. And it's I draw for each one a line shaped by their journey, by their lived experiences, and then for each city they travel through, I visualize the number of days spent traveling and the transportation. I met the six narrators in 2016, actually, in the welcoming center they were hosted to. And I asked them if they wanted to share with me this very simple data and information about their journeys. So they spent traveling, transportations, the route. And then for each part of their journey, only if they wanted to, I asked them to share if and when they wanted to, some more qualitative comments, notes, memories, and they share with me very beautiful, beautiful comments that I will never forget. And this project, from a visual point of view, it's very, very minimal. It's different from the other ones I usually work on. It's very minimal. The lines are very straight, apart from the journey line. The other lines, the other visual elements have a very minimal and classical look and feel. And in this case, I really wanted to combine elements, visual elements that we often associate to rationality, so geometrical and minimal and clean. It's a cultural association because you can be rational even if you design very decorative visual elements. But in this case, I did it on purpose to talk about a topic that I live in Italy, so I witnessed how it's narrated in Italy, a topic that I think it's subject to spectacularization by the media, to create polarization, a spectacularization that undermines a clean approach, a rational approach. And this is why I use this very minimal look and feel to talk about the project through very personal and also very simple data sets, where just the stories that they were telling me, the number of days spent traveling and so on. So I don't think that a rational approach, so telling the simple stories of the six narrators and then the empathy, I think that they can stay together. I think that we can feel empathy even if we are trying to get as rational as we can. I also think that in my world, total neutrality, it's impossible. And I'm not even interested in being total neutral. I'm interested in being intellectual honest and declare my presence and my point of view. So yes, this project allows me to talk a little bit more about rationality and also empathy.
Yeah. And the project is really amazing. I'll put a link to it in the episode description. And I think what I really like about it is there are kind of different layers of the project. So you can look at just the line, which is the distance which someone has traveled, and you can see how they traveled, whether by foot or by boat or by car or truck. And then you can slowly add on the kind of more detailed map and story. So you can, through kind of your own interactive participation in it, you can also discover what these people have gone through and just the sheer like lengths they have traveled for safety. I think that's something that really, really helped me think about it. You know, a lot of times in Europe, and I'm including the UK, I mean, we hear about is that, you know, like you said, this very spectacularized language, if that's the right word. You know, we're told here that they're invading us, that they're, you know, all this very, very kind of violent, even warlike language. And so often we're not told about, you know, where they've come from, what people have been through. And yeah, the distances and journeys they've been through before even arriving in Europe. So yeah, I really love that work. It's very, very powerful.
Thank you.
So thank you.
And if I can just add something, also the visual style was a reflection and an homage to their narrative style. And for me it's very important because I'm making design decision, but I really wanted to respect their narrative, their ways of telling me such stories. And they all told me about these very painful, incredibly dramatic experiences, which in such a calm way, and that they also wanted to reflect this calm and this rationality from a visual point of view. And plus their comments, as I was mentioning, were amazing. And I would just to read one of them.
Yes.
His name is AL, and I didn't use their full name. So he was 17 years old at the time. He crossed part of the Sahara Desert on feet through his journey. And at the end of our meetings, he told me, "You have a beautiful life here because you know that you are safe." And their comments really helped me in adding a very rich emotional layer to this project. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for reading that. And like I said, I'll put links in the description of this episode so people can check it out as well, because it's really powerful. Federica, in all of your work, is there one project you worked on other than the ones we've mentioned already that has really shocked you or stuck with you as you've been visualizing the data of it?
There is a project that for me is very, very interesting because of the design process behind it that I consider as completely different from the other ones I'm used to. So, and it's about the protests in Iran. So if you like, I can tell a little bit more about that. Because before I was mentioning that I usually didn't use social media purposely to, I mean, I didn't create projects purposely for social media. I used to create projects for commissions or personal projects, side projects for me, and then I share them on social media and it is different. But then a couple of years ago, I really started this new way of using data visualization. And the reason was the one, I would like to talk about that. So it was October 2022, and so I was following what was happening in Iran, so the protests following the death of Mahsa Amini. She was 22 years old and she died in a hospital in Tehran in custody of Iran's morality police. She was arrested because of the way she was wearing her headscarf, and I was following all the protests that were following her death. And I was very, very moved and impressed by what was happening there. And I was following it, but I wasn't doing anything because I was, I don't know, you know, there is this thing in which you do something for social media. I had weird feelings about doing something purposely for social media, let's say this way. Yeah. But then one morning I saw some Instagram stories posted by the designer Maral Pourkasemi. She's Iranian and German. She lives in Europe. And she was in her Instagram stories, she was asking us, the people outside Iran, to do something about what's happening there, to post things on social media, to use our tools to talk about what was happening there, because she was saying people in Iran need to know that we are supporting them, because it's important for them to know that we are talking about their protests outside Iran.
Yeah,
and so at this point, I didn't have any more doubts. So I decided to create something purposely for this topic on social media. And I was very moved by an act of protest. So many women were cutting their own hair to as form of protest. And so I designed this this braid in which one single hair is one person killed during the protest. At the time, they were 133. And I create this image with a short caption, and I posted it on Instagram. It was a very quick process, I would say, because I already was kind of obsessed with this image of the air. So for me, designing it was very quick. And when I posted it online, I wasn't expecting to receive. I received so many comments and direct messages. I wasn't expecting them at all. A lot from people from the Iranian diaspora. And they were asking me to doing it again. They were asking me, please keep posting about this. And so I didn't plan it as a periodically updated project, but this is what it became. And the reason why it became so, it's because the people were asking me to do it. They were using my projects to then publish in their social media accounts in different ways to keep the topic alive. And so this is what convinced me that social media can be one of the ways in which we can do something. And then there are many other ways: marching, protesting on the streets, pressuring your governments. There are many other ways. But it convinced me that actually social media can be one of these ways. And I really am very, very fond of this project, because for me it really became a participatory project, because I didn't plan it anything, but the many people who brought me planned it for me in a way that I will never, never forget.
That's amazing. And I think you're right. It's that kind of line of social media between being like an amazing act of like awareness and solidarity. And obviously it's got a lot of negative sides as well, but when that happens, it's just amazing to see. And I think also thinking also about what's happening now in the world, where people, it's also what's so powerful about your work, you know, people start to get almost fatigued. It sounds really horrible to say, but you know, they just don't want to see what's going on anymore. They want to avoid it, and actually finding creative ways of keeping it within people's consciousness, keeping you know, keeping people interested but also aware of what is happening is so important. So yeah, it's really fantastic work. I wanted to ask you as we finish off about your relationship between, obviously you have the projects that you do on your own, but also those which you do with organizations and institutions. And I know that your work has just been added to MoMA's permanent collection. So I kind of wanted to ask you about how you find that relationship between your own work, institutions, maybe even sometimes corporations, and how you see yourself within all of those different spheres.
Yeah, so I would say that I've been very lucky so far. I hope it will keep on this way, because, and maybe it's related to my side projects and now my side projects, or even the first ones many years ago, were received online, because in a way I attracted clients that have intents very well combined with mine. And so I've been collaborating with ODI, for instance, and it's a collaboration I'm very fond of. But I also work with magazines, with scientific, cultural magazines, scientific magazines. I've been working on climate change. So I think that this is something that it's a huge privilege, being able also to be happy of your commissions, of your committed projects. And for instance, the projects that have been acquired by MoMA recently, by the Museum of Modern Art in New York, they have all been designed for different commissions. So all three static data visualization, and one is for BBC Science Focus, and it's a representation of the, it's called Space Junk. It's a representation of the debris and the junk that we are living in space. And another one, it's for La Lettura. La Lettura is a cult. It's an Italian cultural magazine I've been collaborating with since the beginning of my freelancing career. And the visualization that has been acquired is about noise pollution in 15 different cities. And then another one that I'm very, very fond of, it's called Land Defenders. It's a visualization designed for the magazine Atmos. And it's about the environmental activists who have been killed in Brazil by state. And it was a project accompanying a brilliant investigative work by the journalist Yesenia Funes about the the death of an environmental defender, Fernando dos Santos Araújo. And she asked me to accompany her brilliant piece with data visualization. And it's a visualization about the death of the environmental defenders. And I designed these red leaves on a very dark background. And the number of leaves is showing the number of deaths. Again, organic shapes to talk about human lives behind the data. And those are all collaborations I'm very glad of. Again, thinking about Land Defenders, in some way, it's very well connected to the topics I'm personally passionate about.
Yes.
So far, I'm very happy of the clients I have. Let's just hope to keep on this way.
Absolutely. Well, Federica, I feel like I could talk to you for hours about your amazing work, but I just wanted to thank you so much for coming on, and yeah, really excited to see what you keep doing and keep following you.
Thank you so much. It was really a pleasure having this conversation.
A huge thanks to Federica for joining us for this week's episode. As always, if you want to learn more about her work, you can find links in the episode description. And thank you for listening to another episode of the Artpsis podcast. If you're enjoying this podcast, we really ask you to please follow it, share with friends and family, and rate us wherever you listen. Because truly, only with your help can these important stories be heard. Thank you again for listening, and we'll be back next week with another episode.